Excuse me. Hey, boys. Yeah, you. You got something to say? Share it with the whole class.
Welcome to the Back of the Class, a guide to education from the kids at the back of the class. Sorry for the delay in having a show. We've been away for a while, but we're back now and we're ready to roll, right, guys?
Yeah.
We're making some modifications to the structure of the shows. We're still only going to be discussing one topic, but we'll have seen the material for that show ahead of time. Secondly, we're going to focus on discussion more on solutions to the problems rather than simply discussing the problems themselves ad infinitum. And thirdly, we're going to add an ending segment called Spitballing, where the two people who didn't bring the topic for the day get to tear apart the person who did a little bit. It's also important.
If our listeners do not understand that, they can play it back at a much slower.
Yeah. Danny, the guy who says everything at double time.
That's right.
Talking about me saying things fast. All right.
I do think a little faster than most do.
I didn't say anything about thinking faster. It's important to note Simon is no longer living in Africa, so we should be able to improve the quality of his portion of the recordings. That's not saying anything about the guarantees, the quality of his thoughts. He'll have to take care of that, but we could at least have some better sound. Thanks for those people who have followed us so far. We can be found on iTunes by searching for The Back of the Class, and we can be reached by email at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com. I am Patrick O'Shea, an assistant professor of instructional technology at Appalachian State University. Daniel Curry Corcoran. What was that, Daniel?
That's an upgrade in your title from our previous show. Congratulations.
Well,
I just want everybody to know.
Thank you.
You're bored.
Yes. I've got a regular paycheck now, yes. Daniel Curry Corcoran is a technology associate of some sort. I don't know. We'll have to explain that. And Simon Richmond, he's also a technology associate of some sort at EDC. I'll let them clarify that. So the show topic for tonight is brought by Simon, and he's going to run through his topic, and then we're going to talk about some of the solutions that we see or some of our thoughts about that. So take it away, Simon.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thanks for the build-up.
You're welcome.
So the article which I have brought today is called Building a Better Teacher, printed in New York Times Magazine. And it is a very interesting analysis of what's wrong with the American educational system.
Can I ask one quick question?
Yeah.
Just to get us started. This is the it's from the New York Times. This is the same city that has the rubber room, correct?
They don't have the rubber room anymore.
Is the rubber room defunct?
The rubber room's gone.
Yes, they have given up the rubber rooms. They're getting rid of them.
And now they're building better teachers. I get it. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, let me explain something to you. Just because something is written for the New York Times doesn't mean it happens in New York City. Just
I can't see a book of this paper anyway. Go ahead.
Just to clarify. Anyway, go back to you, Simon.
Well, one of the defining quotes in this. Thanks,
sorry
thanks,
to break
Daniel.
Your flow, man. I won't do it again.
One of the defining quotes in this article is when they talk about the U.S. educational system as a dispiriting exercise in good people failing. They start off by trying to figure out what is going wrong, particularly because we are always coming out with reforms, and we're improving the curriculum, we're raising the standards, we're getting better resources into the classrooms. We're analyzing test scores and trying to figure out where our weaknesses are. All of these things are improving, but there's no actual gains. And a lot of research is pointing out that the one thing that you can actually use to predict a student's success is the quality of the teaching. However, there's no clear definition of what a good teacher is. Nobody has a good idea of how to train teachers to make them better. Now, there's good teachers out there, they're in circulation, and they're having a big impact. But the question is, what is it that they're doing that works, and why can't other teachers be that way? And they quote some interesting statistics. For example, the top 5% of teachers are able to teach in a single year about a year and a half's worth of material, whereas the bottom 5% will take a full year to teach about half a year's worth of materials. So there's a lot of people who are starting to scratch their heads and obviously get rid of those bottom 5% of teachers and get new teachers in. But trying to figure out how to get the skills that those top teachers have spread around and how to get colleges that are training teachers how to do a better job. So what is it that makes a good teacher a good teacher? The whole article focuses on a guy named Doug Lemoff, and he has come out with a book I've got to find the title, but it focuses on what is being called Lemoff's taxonomy.
Book is, you got to find the title?
It's called Teach Like a Champion.
Teach Like a Champion, that's right. So in this book, he outlines the major skills that a good teacher has. And they are pretty common sense when you actually start to think about them. But they're skills that are a little bit abstract in the sense that they're hard to teach somebody how to have. And actually, you'd be hard-pressed to find a course in an average teacher training institution that practically instructs teachers in training how to use these new skills. And so he's basically saying, look, if we can get the mass of teachers out there employing these skills, we're going to have a huge impact on classrooms around America. So that's a quick overview. Now, I'll go into a little bit more detail here. Let me ask some questions to try and embarrass you guys. Who can tell me how many architects there are in America?
How many architects?
How many architects?
Six.
Let's see. Hold on. Wait a minute. Architects. I have no idea.
I have no idea. 180,000.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that means, but there are...
Is that House George on Seinfeld?
What? Seinfeld?
Well, George was an architect in one of the episodes, so I just put up that number was counting him.
Oh, I remember that.
Unfortunately, none of our listeners do.
Yeah, Seinfeld, when did that go off the air?
It's best in reruns.
Yeah, that's right. So 180,000 architects in America. How many lawyers?
Dude, I totally know this one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How many?
952,000.
Are you reading the article as we do this podcast?
Are you?
Yeah.
Yes, I am too.
Amazing. Read the article as we do this? That's amazing.
The point I'm building towards is how many teachers are in America?
Drum roll, please.
Yeah.
Ta-da!
If you add up all the janitors and house cleaners in the country, there's over 3 million of them. So architects on one end of the scale, 180,000. Janitors and maids, 3 million. Where are teachers on the scale? Any predictions? Danny, since you haven't read the article.
I would go for six.
You would go for six? 600,000 or 6 million?
We can round it up to 600,000, yeah.
600,000. Okay, there are 3.7 million teachers in the U.S.
See, can I just point something out here?
Yeah.
There are
that I was the closest.
You were also the only one who guessed, but that's how you get close.
There are a lot fewer buildings that need built than students that need taught.
A lot newer. A lot newer buildings that need to be built.
Danny, I think your cell phone is not connecting well. I said fewer, not newer.
No, don't ruin the joke for him. He's enjoying them.
Yeah, he's enjoying it.
Fewer buildings need to be built. Go ahead.
Yes.
So 3.7 million teachers. I was shocked by that number. That's more. There's 3.6 million secretaries. There's more teachers than secretaries in the country. And Lemoff is asking the question, how do you upgrade that many teachers? And we've had this notion of merit pay or bonuses for good teachers floating around for a while, and that's a great idea, but it has a few flaws. First of all, how are you going to pay extra to 3.7 million people? It's going to be a lot of money.
Oprah.
Secondly, just because you have an incentive for them to work or to teach better doesn't mean that they're going to miraculously become better teachers. They're not necessarily aware of what they need to do to improve themselves. And if they were, how are you going to get those 3.7 million people upgraded? You know, that's a huge number. So Lemov has this book of skills, which he has made by filming teachers. He's gone through test data. He's found the outliers, the most effective teachers who have the highest scoring kids. And these are highest scoring kids irrespective of their background. So he's weeded out, income and class and resources. And he's just found teachers who are really making a difference. And then he's filmed them. And then he's analyzed what they do in a class. And he's distilled this book of, I think he calls it 49 different types of behaviors. And they're pretty simple, but they're pretty interesting. For example, he calls one of them what to do. Giving clear instructions, what to do. A good teacher gives one instruction at a time, and they repeat it, and they wait slowly until every kid in the class is on board with them.
It's like you talk to your dog.
I couldn't have put it better.
Brilliant.
Going really slowly and making sure that everyone is with you. And another
try that with my girls in the morning when they wake up for school. Get up. Move forward.
You know that would work.
That would work exactly.
Spitballing now or spitballing later? I'm sorry.
You can spitball now if you want. If you think this is dumb, let me know.
No, I don't think it's dumb at all.
Here's another one. Cold calling. Instead of asking kids questions and then letting them raise their hand, good teachers ask questions to anyone in the class. So in other words, everyone has to have an answer. Everyone has to be ready.
And even if you don't know the answer.
Even if you don't know the answer, you have to be cognitively engaged. You've got to be trying to find it. Of course, helping kids to find an answer is another skill. If a kid gives you a wrong answer, work with them to get the right answer. That's another skill. But cold calling is a pretty simple concept. You either ask one kid to answer a question for you, or you put a question to the class, and then you have some kind of lottery system, or you randomly call anyone to answer the question. Now, I got trained as a teacher, and I went through methodology courses and content courses and philosophy of education courses. But nobody taught me practical skills like this.
You missed your methods class, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, methods class is supposed to do this kind of stuff. But this is the point that the author of the article makes. They tend to focus on broad theories of learning, like constructivism, and how kids are supposed to learn, how the brain works, and how you can be presenting material to them so that they are engaged by it. But this is an actual skill. This is how do you ask a question. These are practical techniques. And they're not hard, but people need to be taught them.
See, here's where I think that you've really got to the nut of the case here. The idea that these are practical skills that can be taught is very powerful. The biggest weakness for me in this article is that it still doesn't advocate any kind of practice of these practical skills. You know, we talk about replacing a methods course with a course that uses that as the textbook still isn't going to do the job. What we need is we need these people who are going to be teachers to go out and practice these practical skills in the setting. That's what we need. We can't...
Is your wife listening to you in the background?
No, she's just in the other room cackling.
Because you were actually making a good point, and her laugh was really inappropriate, I thought.
It's all wah, 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 anyways to her.
So, while you guys are discussing Pat's wife, maybe I could jump in real quick.
What are you talking about, jump in with my wife?
All right, we are broadcasting live here. This is my thing. We are all the parents of kids, right? We all have multiple kids, and neither of us none of us, probably Simon was required to by Keturah, but anyway, have went out and really taken a rigorous parenting class.
Which is why you're doing it wrong.
I would say, I would offer the point that we're all doing a fairly good job, right?
But
we were never trained in how to be parents, and I have a hard time thinking that parenting is essentially teaching. All right, but I think one of the problems, and I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not a big fan of cold calling kids. I think that, and some of the other qualities that were in the article. I mean, cold calling can lead to embarrassment, can lead to shutting down. This is my theory, just my theory. Take it for what it's worth. I was going to let you walk into that one, but anyway, the idea is
we got to wait to hear the theory first.
Teachers. I mean, I would agree with Simon that most of our colleges of education are fairly outdated in how we're training teachers. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, teachers need to be able to engage kids and deliver a good lesson. Teachers need constant feedback in the classroom. And by doing this, I think, you know, they're really going to be able to build the skills they need to actually teach kids, and we don't provide teachers with any real feedback in the classroom. They get no exposure to other teachers. They get no exposure to other professionals. Like Kat was making the point of, you know, they need him to have more experience. We send teachers in cold, and pretty much they remain by themselves over their entire career.
Yeah.
Not many of us outside, whether it's a faculty position or working in an administration setting, have that type of experience. I can't think of another professional that really does.
Yeah. And, you know, the article does touch a little bit about the history of training teachers. And some of these, this point that Patrick was raising about giving teachers in training, giving them practical experience and the opportunities to practice new skills, that was in place in the late 1800s in normal schools. They were really being systematic and trying to discover true methods of teaching. But what was happening at that point, America was just growing too quickly. There were too many people coming in, the population was increasing, and they weren't able to build schools and get them staffed fast enough. So these schools, which were trying to, you know, promote or train good teachers, just turned into institutions that were giving degrees and getting people into classrooms. And so that focus on quality was lost. And now the end result is you end up teaching the way you were taught, because your experience in college wasn't long enough or strong enough to undo all that programming you got as a kid when you were sitting 12 years at your desk. So,
I guess for me, and in the past, my thing is this: the teachers had more common feedback. You know, feedback where they were able to work with other professionals in their building. Like, you know, a lot of teachers come together for meetings, but a lot of the time we still use this outdated, let's provide them a professional development, which is somebody standing up in front of them and providing them a professional development. But if teachers, you know, you have to be able to deliver a good lesson. You have to be able to engage people. I mean, I don't know if you can teach something like that. But the other thing is, if teachers, we don't really know how to group students, I don't think, really well in the classroom. You know, No Child Left Behind has done a lot to help us to group kids around their ethnicities. But we can't deliver instruction based on whether a student is black or white or Asian, right? We deliver instruction, reading, math, and whatnot. If we could provide teachers more avenues for giving feedback to one another, and then using that feedback and the data that we do have around kids and standards, you know, whatever the standard may be, comprehension, vocabulary, spelling, and we could use that to group our kids in the classroom, have constant recurring feedback, I think we would see change, no matter if you have 32 of the qualities or 10 of the qualities.
See, as I was reading this article, you know, the thought occurred to me that, you know, anybody who says, here's my list of 49 skills, and as long as you've mastered these, you can be a good teacher. I think anything that's that prescriptive is bound to fail, because you can find cases that are outliers that don't fit for that. Perfectly acceptable teachers who are successful and may not do all of these little things. They depend on other little tricks that make them successful. As I was reading this, I thought, you know, if I were going to propose what I wanted to see and what I think is wrong with teacher education, I'd say pretty much what I've already said. Things like, you know, teachers should practice the skill of teaching rather than learning about it as a theory. There should be more mentoring once teachers are in practice so that they're not in whatever their first year class is and they're just left to their own devices. But, you know, there's a couple of other things. I think that teachers of teachers should spend more time in actual schools. You know, the problem one of the big problems we have is that the teachers that we have in higher education that are teaching our future teachers never have really an incentive to go out and spend any time in the classroom where their students will be teaching. So I think that it should be part of the professional experience of teachers to go out. And last, none of these things are, this isn't a prescriptive list either, but I think that we should also try to make teachers
just
more
say
aware.
Last, randomly.
Yeah, I'll just say last. This is my last point. How about that, Danny? I think what we need to do is we need to make pre-service and in-service teachers aware of the skills that they need and that the skills that they have. One of the most telling quotes in here, let me read it, came relatively near the end of the article. This guy was sitting, you know, with somebody, I don't even remember. He was talking about first, Lemov's taxonomy is content neutral, Ball connects hers to math. So they're talking about this woman who's a math teacher. She says the second difference was, while these practices were so ingrained they seemed imprinted on Ball's soul, when it came to talking about them, to passing them on to her students, she had no words. Which means she had the skills, she just didn't know that she had the skills. It was just ingrained, it was innate, it was an innate thing, and she didn't know how to convey that. So that implies to me that she has no idea what makes her a successful teacher versus an unsuccessful teacher, and people have to have some metacognitive nature in be able to reflect on their abilities.
Right. And this is what makes Lemov's approach remarkable, is that he has distilled this list, and maybe it's a wrong list or it's too short or whatever. But what was most shocking to me when I read this article was the point that the industry doesn't know. There isn't a definition out there. And no one is really trying to define it for us.
Well, that's not true.
We know that. Well, like you had said earlier in the article, as you mentioned, that we know that one of the most, one of the things that impacts students learning the most is quality teaching. But then we say we can't measure it. We don't know what it is. We don't have a definition. If we don't have a definition and we don't know what it is, how do we know it impacts learning? So we do know what it is, but I think we just get more mileage in continuing to talk about it. I mean, one of the frustrating things is that we're still thinking about how to build a better teacher. I mean, we haven't figured that one out yet. We're in more trouble than many may think we are.
Well, you're right. It's a big problem. But unfortunately, the system is set up so that we haven't really looked at this yet. And like Patrick was about to say, Gates has thrown a considerable amount of money into it, and they've got a medium-term study underway right now. Just to find out what is a good teacher.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was done. Well, what was your point?
And that gets back to my point of we've been educating people for millennia. Parents have been educating people for millennia. And we haven't had this rigorous, structured program. We learn by example. You know, now, granted, I know, a parent doesn't have 25 kids in the classroom. I just don't think it's that. We spend a lot of time trying to quantify it and study it and make it scientific. It doesn't seem that complicated to me. We need people who can stand up and engage students. We need people who reflect with other professionals on a regular basis. Somebody has some basic content knowledge. One of the things that seem to be missing for me is that teachers have no time to discuss their craft. What do? They teach.
Okay.
If you're a high school teacher, you teach 150 kids, you come home, you got a family, you grade 150 papers, you go back and start all over again.
Let me put this question to you, Daniel.
That's broken. It's the processes that's broken, in my opinion.
You've made this really good point that teachers need more feedback about what they're doing in the classroom. And Patrick has come in and said, you know, they need time to practice and they need to be supervised as they're practicing and given corrective feedback. So how do you get this core of teachers, almost 4 million of them, how do you institutionalize some kind of feedback mechanism? What would that look like in a classroom? What does the principal or what new staff position needs to be created? Are we putting webcams in every room and having monitoring?
That's a good question. Well, no, I think, and that opens it up to kind of, I mean, a common experience we all share, right? The three of us. I mean, we've all come through basically, I think, Simon, were you an intern, Simon, or no?
No, I went through a student teaching phase, but I wasn't an intern.
Well, Pat and I have a similar background in terms of how we came into teaching. One of the things that I think was valuable about my student teaching experience is that I was not just a student teacher, but I was actually a teacher for many students. And the way we did that is we took our teaching, our pre-teaching experience, and turned that into a longer period of time. And we're paid a small amount of money for that. You know, we're not going to be able to add staffing positions in this type of economy. You know, it's a public schools, it's tax money. Nobody wants their taxes raised. So we're not going to have this, you know, this great opening of the doors of hiring more teachers. But I think if we had more, as Patrick has already mentioned, more collaboration between colleges of education who said, okay, this traditional teaching or, you know, pre-teaching experience is not working. Let's give students longer periods of time in the classroom where they can actually, as Patrick mentioned, practice their craft over time. And, you know, and we have to fund that at a much smaller level. But again, that gets back to one of my key things is that communication. We need more communication between schools and colleges of ed. And how do we improve this process? We continue to write articles about how to build a better teacher. I mean, just getting a little exhausting. It's hard for me to read them. I mean, it's like everybody wants to say, how do we do it? We can't measure it. But we've been doing it. We're just trying to make it more difficult than it needs to be.
Here's what I would say, and some of this will validate what Daniel is saying, and some of it goes against what Daniel is saying.
Shame on you.
here's where I disagree with Danny. I think that we don't do anybody a disservice by trying to think about what are the minor skills. Now, I'll completely agree with him. Yes, all we really need are teachers who are people who can get up in front of a class and engage student learning. You know, one of the things that Dwight always talked about was, you know, all you need is a happy brain. All you need is an engaged brain. All you need is, and those are very simple things that talk about what are the prerequisites for education. But at the base of that, there's the theory. But you have to build on practical skills to make that happen. You know, parenting is a good example here. Yeah, you know, all the three of us, I consider us all three pretty good parents, you know. But there are plenty of people out there who don't have the skills that we have. Whether we've learned them or we've just, you know, we've had more stable family relationships, or we're getting them more from our partners or whatever, we're getting those skills somehow. But there's lots of people who don't have that background, and so they have no way of knowing what it takes to be a good parent. It's the same thing. We need to find a way to get the teachers of the future to interact with the teachers of now to learn those little tricks of the trade. Now, here's what I would say. A very practical solution to this is we're looking right at a huge bubble of teachers who are well qualified and will be leaving the profession soon. They talk about it in this article about the need to hire as many as 1 million new teachers because of the baby boomers retiring. Well, those retirees are not going to go, for the most part, they're not going to go and live on islands in the Bahamas. They're not going to be, they're going to still be part of the communities where they have taught for their entire lives. Leverage those people. In some cases, they won't even necessarily be looking to be paid, or even, you know, do they need to be paid a huge amount? No. What we can do is we can find social networking ways to connect those people with pre-service teachers, leverage some of the technology, ask some of those people who are retirees to come into the pre-service training and present some of these, you know, tips of the trade. You leverage that, and you're making these connections. I don't think it has to be as hard as we have to figure out a way to convey to every single teacher that's coming into the profession how it's going to be. You know, we need to start looking at what resources we have available to us.
Well,
I like the idea of giving back. Good point.
We need to find resources that are out there. But you guys keep saying what the article is saying. We need teachers who are just good at engaging students. And that's the fundamental question. How do you engage a student? What are the skills that that person has? Nobody has a clear list. And actually, this vague word engage that you've both used, it would seem to not really fit into the list of things that predict teacher success. Because they've looked at personality and how extroverted you are, how confident or enthusiastic you are. And those have got nothing to do with student success.
Well, that's a different thing than engaging a student. An introvert can engage a student with the right set of skills.
So what does engage mean? Like, what list of skills do you write down if you see somebody engaging, being engaged?
Well, how do you engage your kids?
He yells at them.
Right? Well, there we go.
You know what each kid's interest is. You know how to get their attention.
Good.
And you present.
Why can't teachers do that?
Well, they should.
You know why? You've invested in your kids. You know, I think laughter, keep down to a minimum. I mean, for me, I don't think we're addressing pivotal questions in education. And I know in a country where, you know, a Christian country, and lots of different religions around the world. But essentially, education is more about reading and writing. I think we're missing some fundamental spiritual qualities that we're not teaching kids or even sharing with kids. And I'll say one of them, I don't think kids really feel loved in the classroom. And, well, I thought Patrick was going to handle that a little better. But anyway, I mean, I think your kids know that you love them, and they know, I mean, even if you don't want to express the word love, that you care for them and that you're there for their best interest. I don't know how many classrooms you can walk into and ask kids, do you feel your teacher loves you or cares for you or thinks that you're here for their best interest? If they did, they wouldn't be misbehaving.
Are you saying your kids don't, your two girls don't misbehave because you love them?
No. They're always checking boundaries, right?
He's just saying that he beats them very gently.
But I know how to engage them. I know how to their interests. I know their interests, and I know how to engage them because of my love for them.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to have to do this, but we're over time right now. So if we could just take a little time and spitball this to say, you know, this article, this show would have been better if. We'll start with Danny.
This show would have been better if. Stop reading these boring articles. I mean, just trying to razz Simon a little bit. I think the show would have been better if. And that's not really a spitball. You directed the spitball. My spitball is kind of.
Then take it whichever way you want,
these
man.
Articles stop. Excuse me?
Then take it whichever way you want to take it.
I didn't mean to offend. I did not mean to offend. I think one of the things is that in education, we keep dealing with the same question. And I read the article all the time. How do you build a better teacher? How do you build a better school? How do you build the car of the future? How do you fix global warming? I mean, it's just a question that keeps getting asked and asked. And we keep saying, we don't have the answer. We don't have the answer. We don't have the answer.
But that's what this guy is actually saying. He's saying that he has an answer.
He's got 49 in
them. Everybody says that. And everybody, and now I'm going to go out and write an article tomorrow that says I have the answer and you have the answer. And it just seems that
but we
in education,
don't. He does.
But I could write an article about it.
If but, we had the answer, we'd write a book. Listen, but we're doing podcasts.
Yeah, without reading the guy's book, I don't know whether the guy actually has an answer or not. But I think that it's worth asking the question until we get an answer.
I'm going to read the book.
It's like saying, what is how preparing kids for the 21st century? I mean, we're a decade into the 21st century, and we're still asking that question.
All right.
It's a little old to keep asking the question. We need to get some... you need to get some better channels of communication. So I think it would have been a little better if we could read about what is actually happening out there to make a change, not saying I've got the next 40 qualities.
All right. Well, then you can bring that next show. All right. You find an article.
I will bring that next show.
All answers to all questions from you next show.
Well, the answer is 42. Everybody knows that.
Six.
Here's my spitball. I've got two things. First of all, I think this I'm much more interested in this if it's a little bit more balanced. Yeah, it's all well and good to find out what the 49, you know, characteristics of good teachers are. I would like to see what are the 49 characteristics of bad teachers. Tell me that as well. All right? Because
that,
for all
that would be good.
Because for all I know, he could be videotaping 49, you know, he could go through the entire same process, find all of the worst teachers, videotape them, and find they do the exact same things. All right? So I want to know what that comes down to. My second thing is, I want to know what it takes to be a good learner, all right, as well. You know, I've been reading some interesting articles by the guy who came up with the I can't even remember what his name, Papier or something is, he coined the term constructionism. One of the things he does when he introduces this concept of constructionism, he talks about how there's a term for the skills associated with teaching. It's called pedagogy. You learn the skills associated with teaching.
Let me get off my dictionary real quick.
But there's no corresponding term for the skills associated with learning. And I think we should focus on that side of the equation a little bit too. So those are my two spitballs.
And I just want to spitball Danny, because I actually have a recording of him now saying that the whole educational system will be fixed if we just love the children more. That's all we need to do.
I don't think I'm the first one to say that.
You're the first one to say it and sound quite that creepy.
This is a key point. Write that down in the notebook. It's a matter of caring for somebody enough to really engage in them and know what their qualities are, know what interests them. I don't think it's much more difficult than that.
All right. Well, anyway, I
want to... You want to love them.
Yeah. Well,
love them. Love all the children.
Listen, I'm having enough.
I like when Pat tries to close the show and you keep interrupting him. It works really well.
I'm having enough trouble just getting my head around the idea of just love everybody. It's all right. All of our problems. Yeah, John. That sentiment.
Love everybody. I just love the children. You know what? I have no love.
To. Yeah, that sentiment got John Lennon shot. All right. So, anyway,
Pat and Kitcher and Ron.
Exactly. Anyway, Simon, Danny, I appreciate you taking the time this evening.
Good time.
I will talk to you next time.
See you later.